This podcast is a presentation of Christ Community Church in Chesapeake, Virginia. Thank you for listening.
So, I'm going to teach a little bit. I guarantee you guys, there's notes you can take one down and pass it around. It was a really funny experience for me this week to think about teaching. Because as I was studying, I was collecting information. This is what I do. I start collecting info and trying to figure out how to hand it back to people in a way that makes sense. And as I was going this week, I was thinking to myself, I was like, how am I ever going to fit all of this information into one talk? And then it was literally Saturday morning, I had kind of a realization that I don't have to. Because we're going to keep doing this, I can break it into a bunch of talks, which is different from my normal experience of only getting to speak or teach every 6 months, feeling like I have to say everything all at once. So just a little bit of a preface about this first talk is we're kind of laying the groundwork here for the rest of what we're going to be teaching over the next couple weeks. And so if you are here and... And you're kind of familiar with preaching and teaching. Please don't be offended that I'm not using preaching expositionally through the scriptures. That we're laying the beginning idea here of eventually what will become preaching through the scriptures. But this first talk is kind of ground level. Why is this important? You'll notice in the notes that we're asking the big questions at Christ Community Church. These big questions that mean a lot to us. And the first one is, what is the meaning of life? We joked around all week. I put it on Facebook. There was a running column on Facebook about the big questions, the important questions. And one of those questions that we would answer would be, which burrito bar is better? And Chipotle or Qdoba? I know. Okay, so I'm just going to say, I think Tanya over here might actually be a Moe's fan. Are you Moe's? Oh, Qdoba. But I think she's just saying that because the office movement in the office of the other ladies with Qdoba.
Are you joking?
No.
What
is Qdoba?
Okay.
Let me tell you. We went
to
the
if she wanted the other place.
Actually, I think that's like the, in Spanish, it was like cow blood or something. Cow blood.
So those of you,
we think they were any different.
In our area, we didn't have the first burrito bar that we had was Moe's, and for a long time, Moe's was it. And then everybody got really excited because they put in a Qdoba, which is another kind of burrito bar, kind of a step up from Moe's. And then everybody got really, really excited when, like, 6 months ago, they opened up a Chipotle.
Okay, where is
the Qdoba? Qdoba is in the Target Shopping Center over by 17th Street Surf Shop, in that back left-hand corner. Chipotle is in that Starbucks, the one that's by Panera.
So they're right next to each other.
Well, they're kind of competing. And then Moe's is back in the town center behind Target.
But
Chipotle
was
in D.C.
They had them all up there.
Right, they're pretty popular. But that was actually just kind of the run for. And I'm just going to say, we humored the Qdoba people that we know and went this past week. And I'm sorry, Chipotle is better. And so since I'm teaching, we'll just have to accept that. Truth, it's not up for debate. Yes, it's not up for debate any longer. But to kind of get into the real question of what is the meaning of life, and this is really good for a core group, okay? For a core group of people who are together and wrestling with why do this? Why start a new expression of the church? Why begin something from scratch when so many exists already? And we've talked about this before. We've literally run into the sentiment. Ernie brought it up at church this morning was, people who say, why start another church? There's so many churches already. The church that Danny is coming from is in a row of four churches right in a row. There's a big Southern Baptist church, then a Lutheran church, then an independent fundamental Baptist church, and then a Methodist church, all right next to each other on Providence Road. If you drive through any part of our city at any given time, you're going to run into churches. Even if you go into downtown Portsmouth or downtown Norfolk, you're going to see churches all over the place. The only place you're not really going to run into a whole lot of churches is if you go out to the boondocks. If you go out to Pungo, out that way towards the edge of Virginia Beach, or if you go down into Great Bridge, into Hickory, and get down that way, you're not going to see as many churches. Even though there are a bunch of churches right there on the strip, as you're getting ready to go into North Carolina on 168, there's like four or five churches right on 168. So there's a ton of churches. So what's the point of starting another one? And why are we doing this? Like, so the reason we're doing this is, I put a quote here from C.S. Lewis at the very top of the page. It says, "Christianity, if false, is of no importance, and if true, of infinite importance. The only thing it cannot be is moderately important." So the idea of why do another church really comes down to us understanding that what it means to follow Jesus Christ, what it means to believe in the gospel, is infinitely important. And so the question, right, comes down to, if everything is exactly as it seems, if everything is what it looks like when we study it and look at it and it's just exactly what it seems, then Christianity doesn't mean very much. But if there's more to what we see, if there's more to what this world is and what we can put our fingers on or sense with our five senses, then it's really important to pursue what we're pursuing. And so Christ's Community Church is springing out of the belief that what God did through Jesus is real, that God is real. What God did through Jesus is real. And that it's really important for us to express that to people. And so Christ's Community Church is just one of those expressions. And the bottom line is, the more we can express it, the more people will hear it. So even there's a lot of churches, right? Studies have shown that the best way to spread the truth of what God has done through Jesus Christ is by planting churches, starting new expressions of what Jesus did. So I did want to talk about the implications of this question, is what is the meaning of life? Either everything is exactly as it seems, or there's something more to it. So if everything is exactly as it seems, what we mean by that is everything we know is the result of random chance happenings and in the end actually holds no meaning. So if everything is exactly as it seems, as science shows us, the reason we're here is complete chance. If natural science has kind of come up with this theory of the way that the world happened, the way that we got here, and even just minimally speaking as people, we are the product of evolutionary chance, of chance mutations that have happened over the process of millions and millions and billions of years to actually become human life forms, that we evolve from these very base single-celled creatures and into more complex creatures, eventually becoming mammals, and then from mammals becoming primates, and then from primates become, well, we're still primates technically, I guess, aren't we? Are we to Homo sapiens? I look at the doctor, but I guess he's not an evolutionary doctor.
We are mammals.
Yeah, we are mammals. But so the question then is, right, is if that's all we are, then everything we do is just the product of biological urges. If we are just animals, everything we do is just to try to propagate our genetic material. That's all we do. And so none of what we do actually holds meaning. There are people who have written books very recently that the belief in God is a delusion, that there's no such thing, that it's kind of a genetic, even a mutation. They've tried to identify genes in people that make them more likely to believe in God or not. So if all we are is biological material that has by chance evolved to this point, then Christianity doesn't mean anything. I mean, it just doesn't. The way that the world works and the way that the world is heading is right in the middle of atheist theorists' talks right now. I watched a video of a guy named Lawrence Krauss just a couple months ago, who's a leading theoretical physicist. All right, so let me talk to you about how smart this guy is. All right? For one thing, he looks like a theoretical physicist. If you could imagine what a theoretical physicist would look like he is it. And he started talking about dark matter and dark energy and talking about how 90% of the universe is made up of either dark matter or dark energy. And that out in the middle of nowhere, where there's nothing, that it's not really nothing. That actually when we see out in space, out beyond the galaxy, when there's nothing out there, right, there's no material, there's nothing there, that it's actually he talked about particles of, I don't know what kind of particles they were, but that are shifting in and out of reality. Like it's fluctuating. That nothing is really something. And displayed graphs and charts about it. And talked about the end of the world, how if the universe is expanding, the way that energy is working, and the way that our universe is expanding, he said he knows how the universe will end based off of that. And he actually toyed around, and this is a quote from him, that he was going to title his talk that we're all screwed, but with the expletive. That was what he was going to title it. If everything is just as it seems, this is what the smartest guy that I've ever listened to said, who doesn't believe in God and says, everything is just what we can measure and see and touch. If everything is just what it seems, then we have no hope. All of it is meaningless. He said, if the human species actually exists for millions more years in a certain amount of time, might have been a million years, it doesn't matter to me because my mind can't comprehend it, but he said basically, in the future, when people look at the universe, they will have no idea, they won't be able to see what we see anymore, that the universe is dramatically changing so much that if people are still here in a million years, which they won't, he said, but if they were, that the universe would have changed so much that it wouldn't even be recognizable to us. We wouldn't know what it was. And that basically everything is heading towards utter annihilation. It was really a witty and funny talk, though. He was very jovial about it. But I learned about this talk from a guy named Christopher Hitchens, who's another popular atheist right now. I watched a video that Matt sent me from Christopher Hitchens that one of his guys sent him. It was a debate between Christopher Hitchens and a rabbi about the existence of God.
I didn't even watch that.
Yeah, I watched it. And it was really interesting. And Christopher Hitchens talked about how the universe is so big and so grand that there is this sense of something beyond us, a transcendence, what looks like something should be more, but it's just not. And he said that for him, being a human boils down to irony, that it seems like our lives have meaning, but if the universe is really what it seems, just at surface value, if there's nothing more to it, then it's kind of ironic that we think it means something. And so he wakes up every morning appreciating the irony of life, that it seems like his life matters, but he knows that it doesn't. It doesn't mean anything. And so, right, the most we have to hold on to is irony. If everything around us is exactly as it seems, then there's just no point. And it's kind of ironic for us to think that it is. Hitchens and Krauss both said that it's very poetic to them that the stars, Krauss actually said, forget Jesus giving his life for us. I think it's poetry that the stars gave their lives so we could exist. That we're all made of stardust.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
He is so smart.
Yeah. This is the poetry of no meaning to existence. So then the explanation for the things we see in the world, hatred, brutality, crime, selfishness, and violence, all of those things are very aptly explained by naturalists. They say that those are all expressions of the animal consciousness, the lizard brain, the brutish, just primal consciousness that exists underneath the layers and layers and layers of evolution. that inside we're all really just animals. And so these things like hatred, brutality, crime, selfishness, and violence are all very real expressions of that animal essence. But what they have trouble explaining is the second part of the list. Love, truth, beauty, responsibility, altruism, doing, you know, the sense of right and wrong, sacrifice, curiosity, creativity, reason, value, and even worship. The fact that you can go to the most isolated people in the world and they still have a sense that there's something that's worth worshiping. They can't explain that. If you believe the world is just what it seems, the only way, the best thing you can come up with to explain beauty and the idea of truth and meaning and responsibility is that they're kind of social constructs that hold everything together. But in the end, they just don't mean anything. And so you're faced with this really big dilemma. If all that exists is what we can see and touch and feel and nothing more, then you are left with this dilemma of what's the point? And the best you can hope for is, well, I want to try to keep humanity alive longer, so I'm going to act appropriately to do that. That's the most you got. And so for me, I mean, the question for me is easily answered then, because I mean, to me, it makes sense. All of us are here because we think there's more to it. Right? But the point is, if there is more to it, then what there is to it is of infinite value. As C.S. Lewis said, if God is real, then how we live our lives means something infinitely important. And there's no halfway about it. So if there's something more to it, there's these questions that we have to ask. If C.S. Lewis also talked about this idea that we have as humans that there is a way things ought to be, but we all know that they're not. So how do you deal with that? He says this idea of the way things ought to be, right, is true for anybody. Even a naturalist who believes there isn't really an underlying meaning believes that there's a way things ought to be. And C.S. Lewis talks about how even if you don't believe in God, if somebody takes your seat on the subway, you feel wronged. Or if you spend a lot of time peeling an orange and somebody takes your orange and eat it after you've peeled it, that you have the sense of being wrong. That there's an idea that things ought to be a certain way, but they're not. So religion, then, talking about the constructs of humanity that they build to try to give meaning to the world, are how we understand this. Religion is man's answer to why we have the sense of the way things should be, but things are not that way. That's what all religions boil down to, is trying to understand that. And so all religions say that the sense of why things feel like they ought to be a certain way comes from God, or the ultimate reality, or Allah, or the supreme consciousness, whatever you want to say. All religion says that the idea that things ought to be a certain way comes from a supreme being, that he's given it to us. And they also, right, they also, throughout history, have used this idea of God as a way of understanding the world. One of the very popular things that's going around within Christianity right now is that the idea of God of the gaps, that we deify the things that we can't understand, and we say, oh, that's where God is. So an example of this, and a long time ago, would be the Egyptians deifying animals, right? So the Egyptians and the seasons and the sun, they would see these things they couldn't understand, and they'd say, well, oh, that's a god. These are gods. Even animals that seem to continue to live and live perpetually, right? They would see these frogs, and there was just frog after frog after frog. They would always keep going. They would make frogs into gods. They would make people, pictures of people walking around with frog heads. And we think, well, frogs aren't anything to be worshipped. But in an ancient sense, they were trying to make sense of the world, and they deified it. That's what they would do. And they would say, the way the world works is based off of who God is. And for us, this actually happens, believe it or not, in popular Christian culture. The idea of intelligent design is actually a God of the gaps argument. Intelligent design says that at a certain point, there are irreducible complexities, is what intelligent design says. There's parts of who we are as people that can't be explained. that were so complex, and there's places that just have no way for us to understand God is in that place. So there's actually even this mentality today. Now, we don't deify within our culture frogs and cats and dogs. I remember seeing an illustration once of a famous philosopher, I can't ever remember who it is, who drew the anatomy of a duck. And on the inside of the duck, he placed gears and cranks and turns and pulleys that made this duck work. That's how they thought it would work. So we have this very rational explanation of the world, but when things break down to where we can't understand them anymore, our tendency is to deify them. So this idea of reaching the divine happens in humanity is like a ladder, right? So there's this idea that the way things work is based off of who God is, and we attempt to get there, to understand it. And so in every world religion, except for Judaism and Christianity, the systems that people develop are meant to get them to God. So let's just take, for example, Islam. Islam says that there was a man named Muhammad who an angel came to and revealed that Allah was God, and then gave him a book called the Quran that told Muhammad and his followers how to make God happy and how they could attain eternal life. So the Quran then becomes the vehicle. Following it becomes the vehicle that we climb to get to God. So all religions do this, except for Christianity and Israel, Hebrew, Judaism is the appropriate term for it, is they say that there's a way for us to earn our way to God. The distinctive, why we're studying the scriptures, right? Why we're studying the Bible? Why not pick, right? If all of humanity's attempts are to get to this God, to get to this idea of why things are the way they are, if we're trying to explain that or get to it, why pick Christianity? Why not maybe pick one or the other? Why not be Hindu? Right? I mean, that's a valid question. Why pick Christianity over these other religions? Why not be Muslim or Buddhist or some other religion? Why pick Christianity? The reason is because out of these, all these world religions that say we have to work and climb a ladder to get to God, out of all of them, the distinction is within both Judaism and the resulting Christianity is that it is the only one where God comes to us. Judaism and Christianity is distinct amongst all the world religions in that when God gave the Jews, the Jewish people, the Torah, the law, that said, this is how you know me, he had already entered into a loving, covenantal relationship with them. That wasn't based off of anything that they did. Out of all of the world religions, Christianity is the same. Because from the beginning, it's God approaching us. It's God saying you don't have to climb the ladder. You couldn't do it if you wanted to. And actually showing us in loving kindness that we can't earn favor. We can't earn the divine. That we are just people. But that God wants to have a relationship with us. If you look at every single place where God is in relationship with somebody in the Bible, he initiates it. God is the initiator. God actually becomes the ladder. We don't actually have to make it to him. He comes to us. That's why we study the scriptures. There's a parable that explains this really well that Jesus taught in Luke chapter 15. And I do want to read it. And it's a really familiar one. And I just want us to this is where we start, is why Christianity. Right? All of us in this room would probably accept it. We would probably say that we're Christians. But the question is why? And this is a very important question because what we're hoping to do is deal with people who don't believe in Jesus, right? We're hoping to position ourselves in relationship with people who don't know him so that they can come to know him, so that they see the quality of our lives and they ask the question, why? What does it matter? What's life all about? Why does your life look this way? And this is a place to start. In our culture where religions are readily accessible, you can go online and learn about any of them. And when every college requires a world religions course in which they will teach you that all the world religions are basically the same at the core, that's what almost every non-Christian college in America will teach you in a world of religions classes. They're all the same. Why Christianity? And this is the crux of it, is the parable of the lost son. We're not going to read the whole thing, but I just want to read where the son realizes what's happened. It says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men, in verse 17 of chapter 15. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father's house and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion for him, and he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Within all of every religion's culture, this idea that God comes to us, that God would actually pursue us, that God would come after us, that God would look past our inability to get to him, that he would care for us in such a way that his posture was to bless us. Right? We sing the song and we read the scriptures that the God of the universe that created all things, the thing that's behind what we can see, feel, touch, and hear, says to us that I love you and has a posture of blessing towards us, is distinctly unique amongst all of the world's religions. And so that's why we're picking. That's why, right? That's why we come to this point. It's because most of us in this room have experienced this pursuit. Most of us in this room have experienced the reality that God came to us, initiated a relationship, and because of what Jesus has done, we're a part of his family now. And so we understand this relationship, but the thing that I think we fail so many times to understand is how necessary it is for others to hear it. We get so caught up in what our lives look like that we forget that God is pursuing the people around us and the way that he wants them to come to understand his pursuit of them, his love of them, is through us. So we're going to spend the next couple weeks exploring the beginning of Christianity, which is actually the beginning of Judaism, and actually look at why Christianity. Next week, we're actually going to talk about why Judaism, why Christianity, even more in depth, is different from the other world religions. Because you'll probably, if you talk to somebody who had any kind of world religions class, would say that the creation story in the book of Genesis is a lot like the other creation stories of their time in the ancient Near East. That's one of the arguments, is that there's no real difference between what the Bible says and what the Babylonian texts say and all these other ancient Near East texts. The Bible is the same, but we're going to actually look at the distinction between them. And again, it comes back to who God is and who we are. And if we believe that God is different, if we believe that that the God of Christianity is distinct, then it's of infinite value. It's not good enough to say, well, all those other religions, right, they're trying to get to God too in their own way. They'll get there. This makes us a peculiar people. It makes us distinct amongst all the other people. And everybody around us should hear this. Because, again, the quote is, right, if Christianity is false, it's of no importance. If it is true, it's of infinite importance. The only thing it cannot be is moderately important. So what we're attempting to do at Christ Community Church is to live out of that infinite importance. It's to not make God secondary to our lives, not to try to fit God into what we're doing, but to actually be a part of what he's doing and to open ourselves up to who he is. And so that's where we find ourselves at the end of this. And this is at the end of the notes, right? Is asking the question, am I just trying to fit God into what I'm doing? Or am I actually letting God put me into what he's doing? Is my life lived in such a way that what I believe is of infinite importance, that the people around me see it and hear it and feel it? And if it is, right, if that's what's happening, then the bottom line is we should be introducing people into what's important to us, why it's important to us. If it's not, then we should be pursuing to make God, this relationship with God, the most important thing that we have. And of course, over the next couple weeks, we'll pursue the idea of how did God make this available to us? And why did God make us? What are our lives supposed to look like? So I'm going to pray and ask God to open us up to this. Next week, we're going to start, like I said, Genesis chapter 1, kind of from the beginning. Not kind of, it is the beginning. And wrestle with the idea of why Christianity, right? Why the Bible? What's different about it? And then move forward from there. So I'll pray. And then I think we're going to sing another song.
This podcast is a presentation of Christ Community Church in Chesapeake, Virginia. Thank you for listening.